United, our will is greater than any other force. We shall inherit the stars, even if we must first cleanse them in blood.
To my dearest friends, thank you for joining me once more as we explore another tale from the 41st millennium. Deep within the eastern fringe of our galaxy, we will find a rather juvenile consortium of worlds who, in the past several millennia, have formed a star-spanning civilization known as the Tau Empire. Through their mastery of technology, they have rapidly accelerated all aspects of their society, forming an incredibly potent military force, which has proven itself time and time again to be more than adequate in allowing their species to carve out their own personal realm within the stars. All within their empire are unified under their belief in a philosophical concept known as the greater good, which teaches that each individual should strive towards uplifting and supporting their wider conglomerate over seeking their own glory. Whilst most within their borders would not question the utilitarian and egalitarian lifestyle which this system has fostered, we must acknowledge that this philosophy is one which was created and forced upon their young species by the mysterious group known as the Ethereals. We could argue that they serve to uplift life in all forms. However, not all within their young empire believe that they hold the well-being of the Tau in their hearts. It is a most heinous crime for any to go against their directives, and so those who wish to be free from their rule will be forced to forge out a new home, out in the depths of space. There is one renegade who has become something of a legend within the Eastern Fringe for finally rejecting the dictatorial leadership of the Ethereals, and he would be known as Commander Farsight. In his youth, he was a protege of the fabled Commander Puretide, but in recent years he has abandoned the wider Tau Empire, and from his path he has formed a sprawling series of breakaway colonies, colloquially named as the Farsight Enclaves. There is no figure more divisive nor controversial within the history of the Tau Empire than of Farsight, and though his martial abilities are truly unquestionable, his mutinous actions have forced the Ethereals to declare him as an outlaw who has seemingly turned his back upon the teachings of the greater good. Today, we shall investigate his life, ranging from his training and tutorship under Commander Puretide, all the way up to the present day 41st millennium, where to many, he seems to exist as more of a fabled myth, who lives only in hushed stories told around a campfire. But regardless, please sit back and relax as we learn of the infamous tale of Commander Farsight. Our story begins upon the Tau Sept, known as Viorla. Famed throughout the young empire, this world was dotted with some of the finest of military academies to be found within their humble civilization, and the recruits who graduated from these schools were often regarded with a true level of renown over their peers. But there was one, born upon this world, who would rise above all others, and from his exploits would he cleave the Tau Empire in twain. Like all within his species, his destined place in society was chosen for him by the ruling Ethereals, who had manufactured the rigid caste system as a way of ensuring that each Tau would perform the duties best suited to their own abilities. In the case of this child, he was to grow as a member of the Fire Caste, where he would contribute to the furtherment of the greater good by giving his life to the ways of war. As would be the case for aspirant warriors, he was enrolled into one of the junior academies at an incredibly young age. And yet, once within their halls, it soon became clear to his tutors that this child would exceed any of their meager expectations. Physically, he was far more capable than any of his peers. But beyond this, he had an extraordinary ability to retain a truly astounding amount of vital data from each combat scenario he was faced with. But these early tutelage schemes were simply not enough to satisfy his desires for war. He would routinely lead fact-finding raids with his peers, breaking into the more advanced Fire Warrior academies to steal away texts that he would ferociously pore over, learning everything he could in any spare moment. Time and time again, he was caught during the act, but he would simply stand his ground, demanding to be taught the full code of fire, which ordinarily would never be permitted. However, his weary tutors at this point relented to his repeated efforts and accepted him into the standard training programs held within their battle dome. The masters of this academy were most intrigued by such a decision. The child was joining them 3 years earlier than what would be expected. And yet he clearly held a great deal of potential, both from his apparent strengths over those within his age group, but also from his seemingly eidetic memory. It did not take long before he could recite each and every volume of the Code of Fire, to master the practice weaponry of the Tau, and to even outperform most others in near every trial provided to them, all of which earned him the nickname of Shou, which in the Tau lexicon translates to inner light. He was continuously breaking records in the Tau simulations with unprecedentedly low casualty rates, unparalleled shot accuracy, and a remarkable speed for leading his teammates to victory. And these deeds would soon garner the attention of a true hero within the Empire. The legendary Commander Puretide was still intent on personally attending to the graduation ceremonies of these young aspirants, and it just so happened that he was to be present on the day that Shou finally became a fully-fledged Fire Warrior. After bestowing the title of Shazlar onto Shou, Puretide conversed with him about his tactical acumen and quickly saw for himself that the young Tau was somewhat of a prodigy amongst his class. The commander, however, could not stay for long, and he quickly departed to fulfill his own military duties. But he held it in his mind that this promising young soldier would soon come into his own, and that when this happened, that he would certainly need a mentor to guide him in the art of war. Throughout his early engagements, Shou was a member of a Fire Warrior team, and he would be expected to remain within his hunter cadre for the next 4 years before any talk of a promotion could be discussed. Despite the young warrior's ambitions, one of his former tutors, a Tau by the name of Shakanthus, was posted to a senior position within this troop, and he had not taken so kindly to the arrogant flair shown during his early training. As a malicious test, he would repeatedly send Shou and his Fire Warriors straight to the front lines where the fighting was at its fiercest, perhaps hoping that he would fall in battle, proving that this youngling was no prodigy and that he was merely another cavalier child who would soon learn that he had no real skills in warfare. Yet this did not matter to the young Tau. He excelled in every situation, quickly analyzing the combat doctrines of his foes before formulating new plans for his squad to outmaneuver and exploit their many weaknesses. From these victories, it did not take long for his commanding officer, the Shasui, known as Mon Oka, to take note of his truly exceptional skills. He had proven himself not only as an able fire warrior, but also as a keen tactician whose tactics had saved their squad many times during their long campaign through the stars. When the time came, Mon Oka recommended to his own seniors that Shou should undergo the first of his trials by fire. And once their battle had ended, the young Tau was shuttled back to Viorla, hoping to attain the first of his many desired promotions. These trials by fire are seen as a rite of passage within the fire caste. A warrior will have no idea of what will be expected of him, as they can range from fighting within a simulated conflict to fending off a horde of enemies in close combat whilst within a gladiatorial ring. But assuming they endure and pass this trial, then they will be promoted to the rank of Shasui, which equates to a veteran squad leader within the fire caste. The first trial of Sho was nothing short of horrifying. He found himself in the heart of a Stygian forest within which he and his squad were assailed by a horde of shapeless and nameless beasts which could not have possibly been born from this plane of reality. Even though he was indeed a gifted warrior, his skills were of little use within the gloom. With each passing moment, his kin were snatched and dragged, screaming into the dark, before other hellish monstrosities dove from tree to tree, falling through the murky air to devour those who were blind to their approach. In his final fated moment, one of these horrors had burst out from the depths, charging directly towards his commanding Shasui. Seeing no other option, Sho dove to intersect their path, saving his officer, but at the cost of being torn to shreds by the otherworldly beast. Though it felt as though he had truly died, this was not to be his end. With a shock, he was awoken. Rising from his own perceived death, he realized that this had simply been a simulation within the Fire Warrior Academy and that no real harm had befallen him. His seniors informed him that whilst many have endured this trial, that it was only the few who sacrificed their lives that could be promoted as a Shasui, and that from his performance, that he had passed. Returning to the front lines of the Tau battlefront, he now walked at the head of his own squad of fire warriors. And yet, leadership at this time was not at the forefront of his mind. For those who have been promoted to Shasui, they are to be granted the honor of piloting one of the mighty Tau battlesuits. However, his own commanding officers were less keen on the idea of providing such a suit. After analyzing his combat footage, his commanders were somewhat unnerved by the idea of handing over a prized crisis suit to one who seemed to rush towards the dangerous front lines whenever possible. And so, they sought to teach him a lesson in patience. He was to pilot one of the hefty XV-88 broadside battlesuits, from where he would remain in a supportive role, far from the chaos of the battlefront, maintaining a constant overwatch to the expanse of their war zone. Though he did not protest, he felt this as a true waste of his potential. He had honed his abilities in the riotous fires of battle, and to simply stand far in the rear, doing little but watch the carnage before him, was nothing short of a disgrace. But nonetheless, he was still an adherent to the greater good, and so he put these thoughts behind him, acknowledging that their victory in this war effort was more important than his own desires. His stint as a broadside pilot lasted 4 grueling years, and though he did indeed come to master the suit, it was truly agonizing for him to remain so far back from the front, being forced to watch far younger Tau revel in the glory of battles that he had always aspired to join. Thankfully, once this 4-year period came to its end, he was permitted to test himself in his second trial by fire. As he once again passed this horrendous struggle, he was to now stand with the rank of Shasvre, and from here, he could finally be assigned to pilot an XV-8 crisis suit. His first experiences within this suit were to be made within the Vale War, and whilst he performed admirably during the campaign, he did not emerge from it unscathed. A chittering mass of aliens had penetrated his damaged crisis suit, from where they devoured most of his left leg, leaving him to be crippled for the rest of his life. Though this was indeed a grievous injury, many of his peers were not so lucky. He saw swathes of veteran fire warriors falling under the weight of the alien beasts, being ripped asunder by the amassed swarms, until all that was left was a spray of blood and the broken remains of their armor. Sho, however, had survived, and from his efforts, he was to be promoted to the rank of Saznami, meaning that he would act as one of the personal bodyguards to Commander Dawnstone herself. Their campaign from this point was swift and bloody. Leading the charge, Dawnstone, Sho, and the remainder of her bodyguards launched a strike into the heart of the alien menace, eventually bringing the Veil War to an end, securing this region of space for the glory of the greater good. Boarding their ships, the Tau Armada set a course to return to Viola, but their journey certainly did not go as planned. As they drifted through the inky void, a host of the skittering alien creatures burst out from the walls of their craft, falling upon the unbeknownst Tau in a murderous wave. This attack came as a complete surprise to the commanding council, who themselves were unarmored and unprepared for this colossal assault, which had now reached the sealed bulkhead to their chambers. Understanding his duties as a bodyguard, Sho yelled for his commander to flee to the escape pods whilst he charged to the doorway, pushing his body against the frame in a desperate attempt to block them from entering. But this would ultimately be unsuccessful. The alien horrors clawed through the thick bulkhead, gnashing through metal until they finally reached him. The beasts simply tore through him, biting and slashing at his unarmored form. Yet even here, as he died under their weight, he still held them long enough for Commander Dawnstone to escape. Suddenly, with a familiar rush of light, he was awake. He was no longer within that accursed ship, but instead within the medbay of his old battle dome upon Viorla. Dawnstone and her entourage had awaited his return to inform him that this scenario had been but another of his trials by fire. Once again, from his sacrifice, he had passed this arduous test, being now promoted to the rank of Chassel, permitting him to now begin his training towards becoming a fully-fledged commander within the Tau Empire. Arising as a commander of the Firecast is one thing, but the journey of Sho was to be made all that much more unique, as it was none other than Commander Puretide who offered to train the now veteran Tau in the arts of war. Most fire warriors, at some point in their life, will have studied the extensive writings of Puretide, but the vast majority of them will only be able to grasp his teaching to some conceptual degree, and in practice, they will find failure in applying his methods upon a battlefield. Thus, it could only be from some of the rarest of talents to emerge from the Firecast Academies who had survived and excelled within the various war zones of the Tau Empire, who could possibly be seen by Puretide as holding the potential to truly understand and grasp the full extent of his work. But this training would be in no way easy. He was taken to Daelith Prime, from where he would need to somehow climb up to the towering peak of Mount Kanji. There was no clear route to the top and no aid to be given, yet this in of itself was yet another trial to overcome. Constructing a series of makeshift pulleys and rigs, he made the arduous journey. Climbing up frigid, windswept rock faces, he was at one point forced to slay a predatory snow lynx, but at long last he mastered the perilous mountain and stood at its tranquil peak. Seeing the commander outside of his armor, Sho was met with a most surprising sight. Puretide was deep in meditation, sitting cross-legged atop a hovering throne, but in this state he no longer resembled a renowned warrior of the fire caste. His body had atrophied, his frail bones almost visible behind old skin, yet even here he in no way appeared weak. though the two would clearly be unable to spar with one another. They were not alone atop this peak. There were two others who had answered their new mentor's call. The first introduced herself as Sharessa, and the second was a young warrior named as Kais. Whilst there was an initial rivalry between these three, each vying for the respect of their master, the laborious trials which they were to overcome soon led to them forging a near unbreakable bond between one another. As their training progressed, it became clear that each of these aspirant commanders had gravitated to a specific style of the Tao art of war. Sho, ever a hot-blooded warrior, naturally heard the call of the Mont Ka, known in our language as the killing blow. Sharessa, meanwhile, was far more careful in her approach to conflict, and so the style of the Kaoyon, or patient hunter, came to her with ease. The third warrior, Kais, however, did not ascribe to either teaching. Instead, he favored the rather rare combat style, known as the Monat, or lone warrior, which primarily covered the methods for acting as an army of one, who needed not to rely upon the support of a wider force to achieve one's goals. As each year passed, the three honed their abilities ever closer to perfection, until at long last, their time atop the tranquil peak came to an end. One by one, they chose to depart, descending from the mountain to rejoin their sept, now to stand as a fully-fledged commander of the Firecast. Though each Tau would go on their own separate course through life, scattering out through the Eastern Fringe to enact their own campaigns, the three would each leave their own undeniable mark upon the young empire. Shazo Kais, the lone hunter, led the bloody, yet ultimately unsuccessful defensive operation upon Kronos during the so-called Dark Crusade. In more recent years, it is rumored that he has come to pilot an experimental ghost keel battle suit. But since his deployment upon the world of Kellic, which is now embroiled within the throes of a Death Guard invasion, it seems that the lone commander may be one of the few survivors, and yet he has not ceased in overseeing isolated raids against the Scions of Nurgle. In the following years, as Puretide finally met with the cold grasps of death upon the mountain peak, Sharessa was placed into cryostasis on the orders of the Ethereals, as they wished to preserve his teachings until a day where his influence would be needed most. It would be during the fated War of Confederation, where the colloquially named Commander Shadowsun was awoken from slumber, and from her clear supremacy over this campaign, she was appointed to act as one of the leaders over the entire military branch of the Third Sphere expansion phase. But for Osho, there would be no rest, as his combat expertise was required immediately upon the war-torn colony of Arkunasha. As a commander, Osho led the Tau Empire through some of its most grueling and devastating campaigns. He appeared with the Firecast as the savior of Arkunasha, a Tau world which was on the brink of falling to a colossal orc invasion, headed by a pain boss, known simply as Doc. The senior Tau command was somewhat unhelpful to the endangered populace, happily congratulating one another on their campaign, even whilst orcs still prowled about within the wastelands. Osho, however, was not content to leave any greenskins alive before departing. He and his forces scoured the Oxide deserts, purging the malignity of the orcs from wherever they could be found. Such was his dedication in fulfilling this mission that the citizens of Arkunasha began to call their savior as Oshova, which in the Tau lexicon translates to Commander Farsight. During this campaign, there was one thought which the commander could not shake. And it was that the Tau armies were simply too inept at close-quarters combat, and that perhaps, if their forces could adapt in the field of melee, that they would truly be unstoppable. Changing their tactics, the Fire Warrior squads would now no longer flee from close-range engagements, and instead they would fortify their position, standing their ground, whilst supporting units in the rear would lay down a second wave of fire, hopefully to devastate the charging mobs of orcs. Though effective, it was becoming increasingly difficult to face off against the green-skinned hordes, as it seemed that no matter how many were killed, that more would always appear during the next assault. As the war dragged on, Farsight was forced to admit that even though his newly reformed squads were indeed inflicting more casualties in close range, that their losses were still too high, and that if they did not receive reinforcements, then this world could very well be lost. As such, he sent a call for aid to Viorla. However, instead of a full armada arriving, the Tau had only sent a single manta, and from this craft, a lone ethereal emerged. Though indeed this would boost the Tau morale, a single ethereal was simply not what the commander needed to save this offensive. Much to Farsight's dismay, the ethereal known as Aun Shi informed the commander that he should take his talents elsewhere, and that the High Council of the Tau had decreed that Arkunasha was to be abandoned, as it was a war which was proving to be far too costly to the young empire. Begrudgingly, Farsight was forced to accept this order. It meant that the deaths of his warriors had been for naught, and that the citizens of this world would be forced to flee. And yet, none could speak out against the ethereal's final word, commander or not. Leading the evacuation efforts, he oversaw the populace as they fled into great Tau crafts. And as he left the world, leaving it in the hands of the orcs, he could not help but feel that this entire endeavor had been but a waste. It was at this point that the Tau first encountered the armed forces of the Imperium. The Damocles Gulf campaign had begun, with a colossal fleet of human vessels invading into Tau space, aiming to put down this upstart empire before it could grow as a true threat to all of humanity. Farsight, during this campaign, once again performed as a peerless commander, leading rapid offensive strikes against near unwinnable odds. And in time, he had learnt much from the human military tactics, so much so that he was able to crack the teachings contained within the Codex Astartes. Naturally, this was instrumental in leading the Tau to many more victories against the forces of the Space Marines. But from his growing fame, did the ethereals come to exploit? They had decided to spread the image of Farsight far and wide through the Empire, treating him as a hero to the Tau, producing colossal effigies in his likeness to be seen upon near every Tau sept. But Farsight could not dally on this unwanted attention, as he was to take command over a new Tau armada to push back upon the battered Imperial forces. For you see, not only had humanity met with defeat during the Damocles Gulf Crusade, but their remaining forces had been ordered to pull back from this region to face off with the newly encountered Tyranid Hive fleet of Behemoth. Thus, the old Tau worlds, previously subjugated by the Imperial invasion of the Gulf, were left with only a fairly light defensive garrison, and the ethereals saw this as an opportunity which they could not pass up. Therefore, the famed commander was to lead a reclamation campaign throughout the region of the Damocles Gulf, with his offensive being colloquially known as the Farsight Expedition. World after world, guarded only by a pathetic vestige of a planetary defense force, fell to the swift maneuvers of Farsight and his armies until, at long last, the entirety of the Damocles Gulf had been wrangled back under the fold of the greater good. But this was not where his fleets ended in their advance. Farsight oversaw the conquest of four colonies, found just beyond the previous borders of the Tau Empire, and if left to his own devices, he likely would have continued on this warpath to capture many more worlds for the glory of the Tau. But this would simply not be possible. Over the course of his campaign, he had lost around half of his military forces, and as they now found themselves far outside of the expected range of this offensive, his three ethereal advisors made it as clear as possible that the Empire would not support Farsight on any further military actions taken whilst out in this distant expanse. Instead of pushing on, he was ordered to collect his remaining armies and to retreat back towards the heart of the newly recaptured Damocles Gulf, where they would await further orders from the Council of the Ethereals. Unfortunately, if he were to carry out this directive, then he knew that he would be condemning the distant colonies to death. For you see, the Tau had detected a gargantuan orc fleet within an asteroid field, and if left unchecked, then it would almost certainly sweep out to invade and devastate the poorly defended worlds of the Tau frontier. Thus, in that moment, Farsight made a decision which would invariably shake the Tau Empire to its very core. He rejected the order of the Ethereals, claiming that the destruction of the Orcs was of a higher priority than retreating, and so he mustered his remaining troops and prepared for war. Though at this point, his insubordination was known only to the three ethereal masters who had been attached to his mission. In time, the rest of the Empire would learn of his defiance. But from his decision, we can safely say that from this day on, that the independent realm of the Farsight Enclaves took its first steps to be freed from the oppressive oversight of the ethereals. The following campaign against the Greenskins lasted for over a decade, and if all had gone well, then perhaps the Ethereals would have forgiven the errant commander for his cavalier decision. But tragically, this was not to be the case. For you see, even though Farsight was one of the most tactically skilled of commanders within the Eastern Fringe, he would soon come to join in a battle upon the wayward world of Arthas Moloch. And here, he would be met with powers that reside far beyond our own plane of reality. The Tau and green-skinned forces had come to clash within a series of scattered ruins, which at their center held a curious eight-pointed dais. In a most ominous fashion, whenever an orc was killed atop this platform, Farsight noted that it would pulse with a burst of otherworldly light. He could do little but watch as more and more blood was spilled, until finally, in one great blast, an impossible disc of blazing fire ascended into the air, only to vomit out a stream of hellish horned creatures, each wielding blades that appeared to be made from pure flame. These were demons. The Tau had never faced off with the immaterial legions before, and so he quickly ordered for a mass retreat, not wishing to sacrifice his forces against an unknown foe. But in one final moment before leaving, he looked back into the blazing portal, and that hell-spawned gateway did indeed appear to gaze back. As they collected their forces aboard the orbiting fleet, both Farsight and his three remaining ethereal masters came to an agreement. Though they were indeed perturbed by his prior decision to go against their direct command, they had still chosen to remain within the fleet, primarily to maintain a watchful gaze over his now questionable abilities to command the Tau armies. But the discovery of this newly emergent threat took precedence over all else, and it was one which they could not simply abandon. As such, the Tau were to once again prepare themselves to be deployed upon this desolate world, where they would return to the Dias and close it forever. As their orcas made planetfall, it seemed as though the Neverborn horrors had only grown in strength. They were no longer made up of small humanoid beasts, but instead gigantic winged monstrosities leered overhead, holding axes and swords the size of hammerhead gunships. One of these lords continued to roar as it cleaved through the Tau battle lines, screaming and yelling to the heavens, "Blood for the Blood God!" Farsight himself was kicked back to the ground before a demonic beast lashed out with his whip, tearing his arm directly out from his crisis suit. But it was there, on the ground, that he spied a weapon. It was an ancient blade previously held by a stone statue close to the dais, humming with an impossible energy that somehow called out for him to take. In one deft move, he rolled towards it, grasping it with the intact arm of his battlesuit before swinging it upwards towards the demon. This beast, however, simply evaded his strike, swooping off into the skies to prowl amidst the clouds. Surveying the battlefield, Farsight saw the littered bodies of his fellow Firecast warriors, but perhaps worst of all was the disemboweled corpse of one of his ethereal masters. All Tau at some point in their lives had been taught that the preservation of the ethereal caste was of the utmost importance to the proliferation of the greater good, and more so than any others, the Fire caste were to lay down their lives in order to protect them. The remaining two who had been deployed were similarly gored by charging demonic beasts, and now the entire Tau expedition was to be bereft of their spiritual advice. Left to fend for themselves, the remaining Tau, shaken by their losses, flocked to Farsight for new orders. But in that moment, he remembered his teachings from Puretide, who told him that to secure victory, the wise must adapt. Assessing the situation, he ordered for his warriors to form a defensive perimeter around the glowing dais, but that under no circumstances could they spill any blood upon its surface. It seemed that he had come to understand that these demons were fueled by the rivers of blood spilling into its core, and so, perhaps if they were to starve it of this sanguine energy, that maybe they could put a stop to this hellish incursion. This appeared to work exactly as intended. Using flamers, they set ablaze to the battlefield, burning away any sprays of blood before they could fall onto the ancient floors. But in one final moment, Commander Farsight lifted his impossible blade into the skies, unleashing a field of hexagramic energy, and once this cloud coalesced around the dais, the portal simply sputtered out of existence, dragging the demonic legions back into the depths of the warp. Though he did not fully comprehend this sword, he would come to learn that it was known as the Dawn Blade. None have discovered the materials used in its construction, nor of how it has maintained its razor's edge for so long, but in truth, this blade was first formed long before the Imperium of Man ever took form. Unbeknownst to Farsight, the ancient sword harbors a truly dark secret. With each slain foe, the remaining years of their natural life will be stolen away, only to be added onto his own. And from this, his lifespan has been artificially extended far beyond what would otherwise be considered as normal. Though he had indeed found victory during this battle, the wider Tau Empire would never be made aware of his success. He was to be seen as responsible for the deaths of the ethereals, and yet a part of him did not mourn for their loss. He wondered if the ruling caste had known of these demons all along, and of whether or not they had concealed their existence from the rest of the empire. But if this was true, then he could not help but think of what else they may have hidden from the Tau. Furthermore, the repeated calls for aid sent back into Tau's space were all met with silence. And so, if the ruling council would not support him, then why should he support them back? In this moment of meditation, he now looked upon the first days of the Damocles Gulf Crusade in a different light. It was not inconceivable for the Ethereals to have orchestrated this entire conflict as a grand maneuver under the teachings of the Kaoyon, where the Imperials were baited into invading the Tau Empire, completely unawares as to the true capacity of the Firecast. The colonies and citizens of the Empire who died during the first offensive were merely to be sacrificed to draw the Imperials further into the Gulf, from where they would be vulnerable to the immense counterattack by the Tau. Clearly, the Ethereals cared not for these losses. As to them, the Tau were simply expendable resources to be used up in the furtherment of their sinister plans. And if they were so willing to allow their deaths, then how could they be entrusted with the mantle of leadership? Maybe the Tau would indeed be better off without their influence, and maybe their deplorable war crimes and cold attitudes towards his plight were holding back their worlds from truly achieving greatness. Thinking back, he couldn't help but remember the ancient tale of their first appearance amidst the Tau tribes, and he wondered if they perhaps held some degree of external control over the minds of his kin. This conspiracy, if true, would shake the Tau Empire apart. Civil war would be inevitable, and if that day ever came to pass, then these malicious leaders may very well reveal their true colors and subjugate his entire species by force. Tragically, the only impetus for this cataclysmic event to occur would be from his own word. In order to prevent this civil war, he chose not to fight, but to flee. He left his suit and departed into the wilderness of Viorlos, exiling himself from the Tau Empire, seeing the silent enslavement of his kind as being preferable to their utter extermination. His fellow Tau were left to take command over their remaining colonies, and though some were uneasy at the idea of living a life without the guidance of an ethereal, in truth, they soon learned that they simply did not need their rule. The worlds were functioning perfectly well on their own, and in time, they soon stopped sending requests for aid back into the wider Tau Empire, as in their minds, it felt as though the Council of the Ethereals had willingly abandoned their realm. As the years passed, the Tau Empire heard fewer and fewer tales of Commander Farsight, and in time, he was officially declared as dead, having fallen during his efforts to extend the light of the greater good throughout the stars. The Ethereals, however, would not be content with this answer until they found a body. Sending out a series of probes past the Damocles Gulf, they encountered the worlds which were to be abandoned by Farsight. But rather than finding desolation, they instead found a prosperous enclave, led not by an ethereal, but by the Tau themselves. Enraged at this sight, the supreme ethereal Aun Var branded Farsight as a traitor, and in one fell swoop, he sought to expunge any record of his life from Tau history. Every statue was destroyed. Every victorious battle by his forces deleted from official records. And by all accounts, if one were to look for proof of his existence, then they would simply find nothing at all. Furthermore, the newly named Farsight Enclave was declared as a forbidden zone to the Tau, and that any who ventured into its borders would be seen as deserters, no longer to be welcome within the true Tau Empire. This, however, did not affect those within the enclave to any degree. As I had stated, their worlds were still highly prosperous. and those who now lived upon these colonies were left to carve out their own destiny, free from the authority of the Ethereals. But as time marched ever onwards, and as new generations came and passed, their memories of Commander Farsight slipped into the realm of myths. The colonies, however, persisted in a peaceful state for over 100 years, until one fateful day where war finally landed upon the sands of Viorlos. It was as the 41st millennium came to a close that the Tyranids invaded our galaxy. The Hive fleet known as Gorgon had snaked in through the intergalactic void, and a colossal tendril had set its course directly towards the heart of the Farsight enclaves. Every single citizen within the breakaway colonies was to join in the war effort in some way, but even as a combined force, the Tau simply could not face off against an unending swarm. It did not take long until the skies of Viorlos were occluded by the pulsating downpour of mycetic spores, crashing down into the burgeoning Tau cities to devour each and every morsel of biomass that they could find. But out in the wilderness, within a lone cave, the ancient commander, O'Shovar, still lived. He watched as the sky shifted into a nauseating mix of purples and greys, but as the very ground itself began to stir beneath him, a part of him wondered if his people would bother to send another request for salvation to the Ethereals. He knew, however, that they would never venture into this region again, and that in order to save his own enclave, that he would be forced to leave his self-imposed exile and to return to his people. He walked as a ghost, moving through the battered city streets until he reached the Central Museum of Viorlos. Finding his old battlesuit, still as it had been from the day he left, he once again climbed in and arose as a commander to the enclaves once more. Rumors of his return spread like a wildfire across the world, prompting the remaining Tau military forces to convene upon his position, each warrior desperate to know if this figure was indeed more than just a myth. And truly, he was. The speed of his assessment of the situation was absolutely astounding as he sent out a mass communication ordering the fire teams to take up defensive positions in key strategic locations and informing them of the weakest spots to be found upon the bioforms. But this strategy was unsuccessful. The teachings of Montcar were not suited to a foe such as the Tyranids, and so Farsight begrudgingly agreed to try a plan from the Kauyon. One of their older scientists had claimed to have produced a virulent poison specifically designed to target the Tyranid menace, and this could be dispersed throughout the city, spelling the certain deaths of the invasive beasts. Though it once again echoed his ethereal enforced defeat upon the world of Arkunasha all those years ago, he ordered for the mass evacuation of this world, leaving it to be consumed by the ravenous horde. Once in orbit, the fruits of this plan were clear to see. The great bioships grew discolored, writhing in low orbit, before finally bursting into a field of rot, showering the world in an ocean of alien gore. But Viorlos was now safe, and the enclaves had been reunited with their wayward commander, who was now prepared to lead them once more, no longer afraid of his destiny in standing as a hero to all Tau. Through the following years, Farsight played a far more active role in the leadership of his enclaves, and whilst he was indeed instrumental in defending his breakaway colony, the pervasive menace of the Orcs continued to plague their wayward worlds. The Tau had been embroiled within the so-called War of Dakka, but this conflict would soon be interrupted by a nefarious interloper. Upon the ancient world of Arthas Moloch, the forces of chaos had initiated a truly gargantuan invasion. This had been the place where the commander's ethereal masters were slain by the impossible beasts all those years ago, setting in motion a series of events which would lead to his exile from the wider Tau Empire. Being forced to return, Farsight saw the familiar blasted landscape, with the surrounding war zone being littered with the bodies of orcs and chaos marines alike. Though he did not know of why the warbands had appeared here, in truth, this was a plan orchestrated by Vashtor the Archiphane. The demonic lord had dispatched one of his arcs of omen to bring an army into this region, seeking to steal away a treasured key fragment from this world. The size of this warband was simply overwhelming, and Farsight himself knew that if the Tau were to lose this engagement, then the entirety of his enclave would likely be razed to the ground under the flames of chaos. Thus, he did the unthinkable and sent one final plea for aid to the ethereals back within the Empire. In return, he offered his own surrender to their punishments, under the sole condition that the enclaves could remain independent and free from their rule. To Farsight, this was an offer they could not refuse. Even after his exile, he had returned to aid his fellow Tau back within the Empire during several large-scale engagements, and whilst he did not truly feel that they would repay the favor, he knew that his own surrender was something which they had long so sought. But there was no time to wait, as the battle was already upon them. It dragged on, with more and more Tau dying with each passing week. Sprawling mobs of orcs were put down, ancient legionaries of the Chaos Marines were killed, and yet the casualties within the Tau lines were increasing at a truly alarming rate. They could not win this war, and eventually the ragged survivors were soon to be pushed back towards the ruins which surrounded the old eight-pointed dais. Even as the Tau fortified the location as best they could, and as they set out on rapid assassination missions against the enemy warlords, it simply seemed as though their efforts would be futile as the raging warbands continued to grow in number, charging towards them at every angle. In that moment, however, the ethereals sent their message. A drone hovered down, projecting a holographic recording of the supreme ethereal Onva. And yet, there was not a shred of compassion to be found within his voice. He thanked the commander for aiding the Tau Empire during their challenging campaigns. However, with a stony expression, he stated that through his actions, that Oshova had clearly failed to understand the concepts of the greater good, and that this crime was one which could never be forgiven. The ethereal condemned the commander and all of his wayward followers to death. And as the recording blinked off, it seemed as though the enclaves were once again alone in their efforts. Knowing that there were no forces to come to their rescue, Farsight could only consider one possible avenue towards victory. Sending a mass order to his own troops, they were to pull back even further, abandoning the surrounding ruins to fight atop the sinister eight-pointed dais. As more and more of the heretical Khorne berserkers and brutish orcs charged across the great stone carving, many of the Tau, rather uncharacteristically, were themselves filled with a frenzied rage, compelling them to drop their armaments and to rush forward, to engage their foes in close quarters combat. The first droplets of blood, born from this furious melee, quickly grew into a weeping, sanguine river, and as it flowed through the ancient cracks of the dais, a familiar portal to the warp itself burst into existence. From that infernal gateway, gore-soaked demons clawed their way into reality, slashing out with their blazing swords to eviscerate whichever living being was unfortunate enough to stand in their way. There was nothing but chaos. Tau fire warrior teams were slaughtered with ease. Mobs of lumbering orcs were torn apart. And even the towering chaotic knights were brought low under the weight of this newly summoned demonic legion. As more blood fell upon the dais, the portal only swelled in size, bringing forth more of the neverborn horrors to sate their eternal appetites on the pathetic mortals below them. The malign touch of the warp, however, was simply too strong for the commander to ignore. The sounds of battle, though deafening, were drowned out by the sound of his own blood thumping through his ears, and as his own vision faded, he briefly gave into his dark thoughts and saw a vision of what could be possible through the gifts of the warp. He would no longer stand as a Tau, but instead as an effigy of death. He would transform into a Goliath in those blasted ruins, towering over the battlefield as a titan of war. No longer would he clutch onto his dawn blade, as it could be replaced instead with a gargantuan axe dripping with the blood of the fallen. His own armor, twisted and deformed, was to be coated in brass chains, and hanging from them, he saw the screaming skulls of every ethereal to have ever betrayed his kind. Even as his hatred and frenzied rage grew, there was one voice to be heard over the chaotic cacophony of war. It was the teachings of Commander Puretide, softly echoing through his mind, urging him that victory could only be achieved if he could once more embrace the bonds of loyalty towards his kin and abandon these dreams of ascending as a corrupted lord of death. Clinging to this thought, he felt his own soul dragging out from the impossible ocean of the warp. And as this momentary madness came to an end, he once again stood within his old armor, no longer as a titan of war, but as a commander to the outcasted enclaves. With the chaotic battle still raging, he understood that this was the final possible moment for the Tau to make their retreat. And though a part of him still wished to spill the blood of his foes, he was content to leave them to fight amongst themselves, if it meant that his kin could flee to safety. Leading the charge towards their extraction zone, he once again oversaw the evacuation efforts, and as they departed from this world, the commander looked down at the carnage which remained. It was an ocean of gore, but the only figures who now dwelled within its muck were of the orcs. The chaotic forces had seemingly disappeared, having achieved their mysterious mission. But it mattered not, for the Tau had survived, and they would yet live to see another day. 9 years since the day of this battle, Commander Farsight returned to this world, and to his relief, he found the ancient eight-pointed dais as a fractured ruin, which could never again be used to summon forth the demonic legions of the warp. Looking closer amidst the ashes, he found a sight most remarkable. Not only was that corrupting artifact utterly destroyed, but he saw a single blade of grass sprouting forth from the ruins, and so, perhaps in time, this world would once again be able to harbor the great gift of life. Over the years, the Farsight enclaves would continue to grow in strength under the watchful leadership of the ancient commander. Those within the colonies have forged their own path, free from the oppressive and sinister rule of the ethereals. And though the Empire has turned its back upon their plight, in truth, it seems as though they are better off on their own. Perhaps in time, these renegades will flourish to such a degree that one day they may rival the wider Tau Empire in its scale, but these are secrets known only to the Master of Fates. Whatever the future holds in store for them, we can be sure that through each and every campaign that at their head, we will find the indomitable luminary known as Commander Farsight. This shall now bring us to the end of our tale. My dearest friends, I thank each and every one of you for listening to this fable in its entirety. Yet I must once again close this chapter. I truly wish you all the best, but for now I must bid you goodbye.